What you have before you is a timeline and a list of historical epochs of monastic reform and renewal. This subject is vast, and of course we're only going to be able to hint at, to probe the very surface of this subject by focusing on two particular periods, on the era of Saint Benedict himself, a somewhat paradoxical monastic reformer, as we shall see, and looking at the modern era, looking at the liturgical movement and its founder, Prosper Guéranger, the abbot of Solesmes, and the living out of his ideals in the form of the adaptation of the liturgical movement into the reform of the Liturgy of the Hours in the monastic context. And in particular, because they're the documents with which I'm most familiar, we will look at the Thesaurus or Workbook for development of the Liturgy of the Hours within the Benedictine tradition. And that raises a point and a kind of apology that I need to offer at this point, which is that the subject of monastic reform and renewal affects not only the monastic tradition, but also the other religious congregations and orders that were founded together with, and in some cases in reaction against, or as an attempt to reform aspects of monasticism throughout the history of the Christian Church. And I have been forced to confine myself on both this timeline and this list to individuals and to congregations of particular importance to the Western Church, and in particular to those who follow the rule of Saint Benedict, especially. And having said that, I also need to offer an apology in that even within that context, I've been forced not to mention the names of important people who were a part of the more contemporary reform of the Cistercian and Trappist communities. I've only been able to highlight a few significant names. And of course, I've not mentioned here the refounders of the Dominican or Franciscan traditions in the 19th century. So, for the fact that this is particularly focused on Benedictine monasticism, and for the fact that even from that perspective it's rather limited, I offer my apologies. But of course, in a subject this broad, we are forced to narrow in on particular areas. Let me say just a few words about these epochs you see before you. I have listed both general notions of reform or general epochs across the top, which are broken down in a little more detail in the list below the timelines, things like the desert, periods of mission, of new vision, congregations in the 14th and 15th centuries, and then restoration in the modern era, beginning especially in the 19th century. These are very general and somewhat arbitrary notions, and the breakdown of periods that I have given in the list is more arbitrary still, but they do have some value. Let me just say a few general words. Note that I have listed in brown and with a highlighted background on the chart itself the name of the congregations or orders that came into existence as a result of monastic reform and renewal. In blue, I have the non-monastic congregation, again, unfortunately, only a few of them, that arose as a result of similar needs and, in some cases, a similar insights, but with a desire to separate themselves or distinguish themselves from the monastic tradition with a particular kind of vocation, a particular kind of apostolate, of work, or of service to the church. These epochs of reform and renewal have in general been characterized by the need either to refound religious communities or congregations after a period of devastation. And the devastations I have listed in gray with white characters: Gothic wars, the Viking invasions, the outbreak of plague in the 14th century, and the Black Death, then the Wars of Religion, and the French Revolution, which many people do not realize was unimaginably devastating to monastic life throughout Europe. More than 90% of the monastic communities of the West were extinguished as a result of the French Revolution, and many of them were not in a state of decay. Many of them were at a very high stage of flowering, but they did not represent the ideals which Napoleon's armies were attempting to impose on the conquered nations. And so monasteries were suppressed, and monks and nuns forced to leave their communities, or in some cases were executed as enemies of the state. So to a very great extent, monasticism as it exists today is the result of a movement of restoration and renewal that began in the 19th century in the wake of the devastations that followed the Napoleonic Wars and the Napoleonic suppressions of religious life in the 19th century. So in many ways, what one is looking at today is a renewal that was characterized to some extent by the Romanticism of the 19th century, which we'll see when we look at Prosper Granger in particular. Let me just highlight again what we have already seen and what we are going to look at now. We have already looked at, in this course, a period of monastic reform and renewal that consisted in the interrelationship between cenobium, between community, and hermitage, between Christians who felt called, especially in the 4th and 5th centuries, to live either in lives of isolated hermit life or to live together in communities, and in some cases, to live in ways that combined the advantages of both. That was a period of reform and renewal, that act of reflecting on one another's lifestyles and of coming up with principles according to which one could live is an epoch of monastic reform and renewal, which gives rise to the period we'll be focusing on by looking at the rule of Saint Benedict in contrast to the rule of the Master. However, Saint Benedict is a paradoxical monastic reformer in the sense that usually throughout history, monastic reform means either, as we have said, the refoundation of communities after periods of real devastation, and in some cases, the wholesale wiping out of monastic life in a country or on a continent. In most cases, it refers not only to the reestablishing of communities, but to the reestablishing of foundational, fundamental values during a period of laxity, the need for a return to the original sources during a period when that impulse of monasticism seems to be fading or becoming more lax, or perhaps fixated on something that was not intended to be the real center of monastic life. And so, glancing away from Benedict for a moment, the first real congregation to be created in the Benedictine tradition is that of the Cluniacs, which were themselves based on the insights of Benedict of Anian. We won't have any time to look at this in detail, but the order of Cluny, which was a true order, was partly a desire to emphasize the traditions of liturgical monasticism and to also find a means by which monasteries could cooperate with one another and protect themselves from the abuse of monastic communities by the local feudal lord, which was an extremely common practice, especially in France during the Middle Ages and up till relatively modern times. The Cluniac reform provided a protection, a kind of focusing of monasticism and of the appointment and maintenance of monastic houses on the monasteries themselves. But the Cluniacs were very cenobitic, were very oriented towards community. And so the Camaldolese reform represented a desire to rediscover and reestablish the possibility of hermit life against the background of this new notion of monasteries cooperating with one another, which was not really Saint Benedict's original idea. The Carthusians are a reform of monasticism in general, which we'll not have the opportunity to look at in any sense, but the Cistercians represented a desire to live out Benedictine monastic life in its purity and in its integrity in ways that were distinct from what seemed to be the excessive focus of the Cluniac observance on liturgy. All sorts of prayers had been added to the liturgy. An entire cycle of the Liturgy of the Hours had been added. The office of the Blessed Virgin Mary, the office of the dead, had been added as daily requirements for Cluniac monks. There was very little time to do anything but be in choir, and the Cistercians quite rightly pointed out that St. Benedict had envisioned a balance of work and prayer, and that it was important to try to recover this balance. And there were a number of other important aspects of the cooperation which the Charter of Charity, the foundational document of Cistercian life, introduced into monasticism as a whole. It became a model for later monastic reform as well. But having mentioned that, let's look back again now at St. Benedict in the 500s, and note that whereas we have seen monastic life as a return to an earlier model, St. Benedict, as we shall see, represents a paradoxical attempt to take an earlier strict model and adapt it in the direction of greater livability, greater flexibility. Benedict takes the overly strict and overly rigid rule of the master and adapts it in a way of great charity and compassion, which is not the norm for monastic reform and renewal. Benedict, in that sense, to whom everyone looks as a model, is himself a reminder that although reform and renewal is often a return to a greater form of strictness, there is also the need for an application in charity and compassion, for which, as we shall see, Benedict's own rule, as contrasted with the rule of the master, is the primary example. Well, returning to the Middle Ages, on your timeline, the congregations of the Silvestrines and Celestines represent an attempt to live out something of the monastic hermit zeal in the context of both the reforms that Cluny and Cito had introduced. And we'll notice, of course, that there were other monastic congregations, canons regular, the Dominicans and Franciscans, the friars, which came into existence in the 13th century, based on earlier monastic examples, but with the desire to live out new ways and new forms that would not be bound or obligated to the cloister to quite the same extent that the monks and nuns were. Then in the 15th century, the congregations of Valladolid in Spain, of Bursfeld in Germany, and the Italian Cassinese congregation represent attempts to reform and renew monastic life along national lines. Rather like Cluny, to provide a way for monasticism to be independent of state control, but also the beginnings, especially with the Vanists, who are not listed there, the early form of the French congregation, to develop not only national congregations of monks and nuns, but also congregations that could be focused on a particular task. And in the 17th century, the Maurist congregation represents a real focus on scholarship, a Benedictine emphasis on the possibility of devoting one's life to the fruit of Lectio Divina and making the text of the scriptures and of the fathers, and even historical texts available in the most perfect form that one can, and making that effort a real monastic labor to which a whole monastic congregation could be devoted. The Maurists are a shining example of a project-oriented form of monastic reform. The Trappist reform of the Cistercians by Abbot Ronsay represented a desire to return to a meaningful form of monastic observance in an era which had been characterized by real laxity, to live out again the letter of the rule as best one could, and to try to focus on the need to remain in the community. Ronsay himself had been abbot of Le Grand Trappe for a long time before he actually decided to live there and become a monk in that community. He represents the possibility of really living monastic life in a sincere and very ardent kind of form, a willingness to undertake a very strict reform for the sake of rediscovering the roots of monasticism in an era characterized by great laxity. Then the destruction of the French Revolution meant the need to reform and renew monastic life, in some cases after it had become virtually extinct. The congregations of Solesmes, and we'll look at the founder of Solesmes, Prosper Guéranger, the Benedictine communities, or congregations of Boiron and the Annunciation, to which my own community belongs, represent developments influenced by Solesmes. The Subiaco congregation, or congregation of the strict observance within the monastic Benedictine monastic tradition, and the American Cassinese congregation, which was one example of a rediscovery of a missionary apostolate towards the life of mission, particularly mission to North America. These are all examples which, unfortunately, we will not have the opportunity to look at in detail. This could be an entire course in itself, the subject of monastic reform and renewal. We will, as I mentioned, focus now on Benedict as a monastic reformer looking to the rule as a model, and then the example of Prosper Guéranger and his effect on the liturgical reforms of the 19th and 20th century and their specific application within the Benedictine monastic context.